every year we see these veterans take a hit. There's a lot of them that, like, we have hopes walking into the NFL season, or at least the offseason. Like, do they keep their jobs? They had a stretch where they were allowed to be the guy. Does that happen again this year?
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, D-Bro, and with me, as always, to discuss some veteran losers after the NFL draft is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, you ready to talk about all of these poor veterans that just we saw their values get nuked?
Yeah, and we've definitely touched on some of them during our immediate draft recap podcast, but you know, there's some we didn't talk about, and it sucks, but it's part of the process of the NFL draft. I mean, teams look to upgrade or get younger, and the veterans will definitely take a hit from that. So we'll break it all down.
I mean, dude, we see it every single year, you know, like players that we're like, okay, they could be values, it could be good and stuff like that. And I keep always thinking of Marlon Mack in that instance, like him getting his value nuked. And I know the injury, I get it, I got it. Yeah. We didn't see what could have been. But before that, like Jonathan Taylor, we knew was a stud coming in the NFL. And as soon as like the Colts were like, well, do we re-sign him? What do we do? And then they draft Jonathan Taylor and you're like, oh, it's gone. Bye-bye, Marlon Mack dreams. Never to be heard or seen from again, man. It's rough, man. But every year we see these veterans take a hit. There's a lot of them that, like, we have hopes walking into the NFL season, or at least the offseason. Like, do they keep their jobs? They had a stretch where they were allowed to be the guy. Does that happen again this year? So kick us off here, man. Who is the first player you want to bring up here that you feel like was a loser after the NFL draft?
It's multiple players. It's the Denver Broncos pass catchers, because I think they should have went with Justin Fields at 9. I understand they just traded for Teddy Bridgewater, but having Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock on your roster doesn't mean you pass on drafting a franchise quarterback in Justin Fields. So, I mean, either way you look at it, Drew Lock, we know, was not good last year. Was 40th among qualified quarterbacks in adjusted completion percentage last year. We saw Jerry Jeudy constantly getting open and being thrown passes that were not catchable. Cortland Sutton was good in the game he played, but there was a chance for Denver to upgrade a quarterback here, and they went and added to the defense like they did all offseason with Patrick Surtain, who's a good player. But I think Justin Fields was more of a need for them, and we talked a lot about how Justin Fields is insanely accurate, especially deep down the field. I think that could have been great for Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton. Sutton and Jeudy are talented enough that they could still have good seasons with poor quarterback play, but like Bridgewater was a bad deep ball passer last year too. So like, I just don't see them really realizing their full ceiling with Locke or Bridgewater under center. So I was definitely hoping that when Fields fell and didn't go, you know, third and whatever, that when Denver was there at 9, that they would take him. And they didn't, and as a result, I think Sutton and Jeudy could have had a much better, their values could be much higher if they were to draft Justin Fields.
Absolutely, man. And so, Denver is a really curious. They're an interesting situation this year. And what the heck are they going to do? Like, is all this building up? Do they really actually make that move for Aaron Rodgers, or is it not?
And yeah, I talked about and I this wonder if the that NFL had draft because the Rodgers, what the Rodgers rumors came out like the day of the draft. So like maybe that was part of it. I don't know, because they have been the most linked team to Aaron Rodgers right now is Denver. Mm-hmm. So if that happens, then I mean, forget everything I just said, and you have.
It's worthwhile because the fact of it is we don't know what this team wants to do philosophy wise, if any of that's actually true. And I think that like, with this, especially on this episode, both sides of the coin are really interesting for Denver, because if they don't get Aaron Rodgers, like, are they going to be more of a run-first team? And I'm going to bring up Melvin Gordon here in a second as a loser in the draft. If they go more run-first and they lean on the rushing attack, does that help Gordon? Yes, it can to an extent. But if this is all being set up to be a landing spot possibly for Aaron Rodgers, I mean, then Denver could be definitely pass because they have the weapons to do it, Adam. And if you look at what Shermer's done over the last few seasons directing an NFL offense, like six of his last 13 years, his offense has been 21st or worse in rushing attempts. You know, so could they be super pass heavy if Aaron Rodgers lands there? Yes. Also, could they be more run heavy if he doesn't go there? Yes. And then it hurts the wide receivers there. But I'm going to bring up Melvin Gordon here for a second because Javonte Williams landing there definitively hurts him. Because if you're looking at last year, we know that he took a massive hit whenever Philip Lindsay was on the field. You talked about that. We discussed this on the Dynasty Stock Market prior to the NFL draft and what this could do or doesn't do for Melvin Gordon. And looking at those splits, it's definitely he's going to take a hit, man. Javonte Williams, they traded up to get him. They hopped Miami to bring him in-house. I talked about, like, and if they add Aaron Rodgers and they have less rushing volume, then Melvin Gordon takes the double hit, man, with Javonte Williams eating into his work, fresher legs. And depending on what the offense looks like, I can honestly tell you right now I have no interest on Melvin Gordon. Like, I would probably be ranking him lower than some in consensus because I don't want people that, like, follow our rankings and use those and look at that as part of their draft strategy walking into the year to be like, okay, well, I'm in this range right now. Do I consider Melvin Gordon? Do I not? On a lot of different instances, and we'll talk about it as we get closer to the season, what ADPs look like and stuff like that, I'm probably going to lean closer to the wide receivers, man, because, like I said, I just, Melvin Gordon, there's so many different question marks and concerns.
Yeah, I mean, we saw when Philip Lindsay was active last year, the Broncos wanted it to be like a 60-40, you know, 55, you know, 45 type of situation. And I expect that to be the same this year. Like, Melvin Gordon averaged around 12 carries a game with Lindsay active, like 18 per game with him inactive. So I think as long as Javonte Williams is active and playing for Denver, Gordon should be viewed as like a low upside flex. And then if either player were to miss time, they'd be, you know, a solid RB2. But yeah, I mean, especially because Javonte Williams, you know, we know that he can handle a full workload as a lead running back. But after seeing him in a, you know, split backfield with Michael Carter at North Carolina and Denver wanting to do that with Melvin Gordon, it kind of made sense for them to trade up and get him. So, yeah, Melvin Gordon definitely a loser after this. I'm sure part of it had to do with the fact that he's a free agent in 2022, so they're probably going to move on from him. Plus, he's had the off-the-field stuff. But, yeah, obviously, Melvin Gordon, where it looked like he would be a workhorse with only Mike Boone behind him and Royce Freeman, who they really only play as a pass blocker, not the case anymore.
Yeah, I mean, look, I talked about it, like, and I'm going to stay on the aging running back train here, man. And I know, look, I have professed my love for all things Trey Sermon, and I'm still there, dude. But you got to look at Raheem Mostert is definitely not a winner walking out of the NFL draft. 29-year-old running back. He's an unrestricted free agent in 2022. Some of the same concerns with Melvin Gordon, man. I mean, now, is San Francisco going to run the ball a whole hell of a lot more? Yes, we definitively know that. Morris has been banged up in the last few years as well. I mean, look, he had a knee sprain going all the way back to 2019, 2018. He fractured his ankle, missed 8 games last year. MCL sprain, ankle sprains times 2. 8 games missed. And I'm not calling the guy injury prone, but they are concerning, especially if you're looking at a running back that's 29. He's not 25, he's not 26, he's not 23. And he's more of a slight built running back, so he's going to be relying on his lateral agility and his speed to sit there and get into the open field, because we know he's got burners, man. Duke could definitely run, but there's no way that I could sit here and look at Raheem Mostert as being a winner after the NFL draft, dude. Like, them trading up, taking Trey Sermon in the third round tells you that they're going to utilize him, man. And regardless of whatever we talk about, like, it's an RBVC, you know, you could also bring up that, like, Wilson's still there. They also signed Wayne Gallman. So however you want to slice this pie, it's definitely one that you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to eat it.
We also think at some point Trey Lance is going to be under center and they're going to finally have a mobile quarterback in this Kyle Shanahan offense, which can take some touchdowns and some carries away. It might help the efficiency, although Raheem Mostert's been insanely efficient anyway. That could potentially hurt touchdowns as well. So, yeah, I mean, They also, what, Elijah Mitchell in the sixth round. I think a lot of these running back moves, not the Trey Sermon one, but the ones after that, were more like insurance because Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson missed so much time the last couple of years. But, yeah, there's no way you can leave the NFL draft thinking that Raheem Mostert's value is, you know, on the rise or even the same than before the draft.
No, there's just no way, dude. And there's another running back that you're about to bring up here.
Yeah,
I know we keep smacking this drum and we keep talking about it, dude. But it's got to be brought up here. If we're talking about the biggest losers after the NFL draft, guys that just saw their value nuked, this name has to be mentioned, Adam.
Yeah, we talked about it, and like I don't need to go too in-depth, but I wanted to bring it up in case anybody's listening and saying, how do you not have James Robinson in here? But it sucks because he had like the best running back season from an undrafted rookie ever last year, but the situation is just completely different. I talked about it. Last year, they had Ozigbo and Raquel Armstead who were out at the beginning of the season, and they just didn't have a backup running back. So James Robinson comes in, and they obviously traded Leonard Fournette or cut him. And Robinson comes in as an undrafted rookie and gets immediate huge workload, led the NFL in opportunity share, was averaging over 20 touches a game. Like, they didn't have anybody else to give the ball to. And now not only do they have Carlos Hyde, who can be a serviceable backup running back, and Urban Meyer even mentioned him as the one and two, like the 1-2 punch, before mentioning Travis Etienne, who they drafted at 25th overall. We all heard Urban Meyer say he's going to be a third down back. Okay, you don't draft a third down back at 25 overall. He's going to be probably the starter come November. So I think James Robinson's still going to be, you know, have some value, especially to start the season. But it's, you know, where he was being like a top 12 running back before the NFL draft, it's that those days are long gone. And I hate to see it because I love James Robinson. I love what he's done. But Urban Meyer wants to have a fast-paced, high-powered, you know, explosive offense, and he paired ETN with Trevor Lawrence, and that obviously says a lot, especially with the new regime. You talked about it a ton this offseason. The fact that it's a new regime meant that as great as James Robinson was, they didn't owe him anything.
No, they don't, man. And nobody, like, this coaching staff doesn't care about what players have done in the past in the sense of, like, before they got in the door. Yes, are they going to give a little bit of credence to, like, James Robinson having a great season? But they tell us with their moves, man. The two clearest times that we get any kind of insight into that is free agency and the NFL draft. They showed us that. They spent the first-round pick. It happened, okay? I understand people want to hold on to their priors, but you got to look forward and see what's ahead of us here. And James Robinson as a workhorse, or probably on the wrong side of a 60-40, 70-30 split, is probably what you're going to be staring at for the NFL season, man. Another running back, since we're staying in the position here, I got to talk about here, is Damian Harris. I mean, the New England Patriots have a lot of dudes. They got a lot of bodies on this depth chart with James White coming back. They also still have Sony Michel hanging around. If you were looking at Damian Harris as a guy that you were like, okay, middle rounds, maybe late, like, I'm going to target him in a lot of my drafts right now or later, you know, like, could he reprise this role as the early down runner? I mean, all he's competing with is, what, Sony Michel, right? Just a first-round guy that can't stay healthy, can't stay on the field. I mean, he did great last year. Dude, Damian Harris is already competing with Cam Newton. And if Sony Michel is healthier this year, yes. And now you add Ramondre Stevenson, which I am not a massive Ramondre Stevenson guy, okay? I'm not. But the fact that they sit here and selected that guy in the fourth round, and what we've seen out of this offense in previous iterations, if Mac Jones does get some run, and we're talking about, okay, they're going to go ground and pound, and like maybe like James White gets some more run in that sense for checkdowns for Mac Jones, we've also seen iterations of this offense and this team where they've leaned on like an early down grinder. And I'm sorry, Damian Harris is not built for that. Like, is he a prototypical build? Can he handle some work? Yes. But you're looking at the fact that he only got 7 freaking targets last year, Adam. And so you're looking at his value is all the way through and through predicated on his rushing and the touchdowns. Cam Newton's hardened part of that. Ramondre Stevenson could have been the other coffin nail for him as well, because Ramondre's a big body back. He's going to be a goal line option. He's going to be involved. And it's not like they picked him as a UDFA. They've drafted him in the freaking fourth round. So even though I'm not massively high on Ramondre as a prospect, he doesn't need a ton of speed behind this offensive line to fit what the New England Patriots want out of that position and that role, and that's to be able to handle volume, to sit here and find the holes behind a top five offensive line, and score touchdowns. And if any of that's the case, Damian Harris's value is, like, you basically can't draft him right now. There's no way, dude. Like, I would rather take Ramondre Stevenson late in best ball right now and take him as the free pick that nobody's gravitating to. Because how are you going to invest a middle-round pick, even a late middle-round pick, in Damian Harris? I can't fathom it right now, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, surprise, surprise. I'm not excited to draft a Patriots running back. And the Ramondre Stevenson draft pick in the fourth round doesn't help this. So, especially if Cam starts the season again. Like, we saw him score. Like, Cam Newton, I think, was... Yeah, Cam Newton was top five in rushing attempts inside the five-yard line last year, among any players. Like, yep. That's, if he's under center again, that philosophy for their offense is not changing. So that already caps the upside with touchdowns. Then you talk about the upside's extremely capped in terms of pass catching. What, do you hope the guy runs for 100 yards every game then? Like, that's all you have left.
That was the only hope for DFS. If you were willing to, like, roster him last year in your DFS lineups, you were hoping that Damian Harris, like, went for 100 yards and two scores. And past that, like, what were you doing? You know what I mean? But staying with the mobile quarterback theme and running backs that are hurt because of all these different factors we're talking about after the NFL draft, why are you down on Miles Sanders?
So, I can't believe Kenneth Gainwell was drafted where he was. I thought he was a much better player. What was that, the fifth, sixth round? But with Miles Sanders being so inefficient as a pass-catching running back last year, and then they bring in Kenneth Gainwell, that's a little concerning. Plus, they still have Jordan Howard there and Boston Scott. Like, does this new regime with Nick Sirianni, who you've talked about with your concerns, does he use multiple backs like Doug Peterson was in the past with Philadelphia? If that's the case, that's bad, especially if Kenneth Gainwell is going to take passing downs work. Then you add the fact that Jalen Hurts could steal rushing touchdowns as well. So it's like Miles Sanders this time last year, a lot of us, myself included, were saying, okay, there's an easy top 10 potential for this guy. That seems long gone for me now with the way the offense is changing, with the addition of Kenneth Gainwell. I think he's like a fine running back two target because I still think he's a talented player. And I think he'll be efficient with Jalen Hurts under center, but I don't know if there's going to be a lot of ceiling for touchdowns, and I don't know how many passes he's going to catch, because coming out of Penn State, he was a really good pass catcher, especially, you know, deep down the field. He was running legitimate routes, but he took a step back last year with drops and everything, and they add Kenneth Gainwell, who you can make the case is the best pass catcher running back in this entire draft class. It definitely concerns me a little bit.
Well, then you still have Boston Scott in the building, dude. Like, he can catch passes, too. I think, like, you're spot on, man. Miles Sanders, the ceiling has been hard capped by all these different factors. And you even worry about the floor, too, dude. Like, Jalen Hurts is going to run the dang ball as long as he's the starter, which, I mean, who get out of here with Joe Flacco. Like, he's going to be the starter this year. And it's going to hurt Miles Sanders, man. Like, so you have volume concerns. You got pass game concerns. You have the ceiling. I mean, really, like, how do you even come up with a projection for a ceiling for Miles Sanders unless Joe Flacco were to take the role of starting quarterback? The ceiling is hard cap, dude. So I'm with you, man. Like, I think Miles Sanders is a guy that's still based off of name recognition and based off of what we've seen. I think you could still possibly move him in dynasty circles, and I think that's a great move to make. You need to be getting him off your rosters right now, because the concerns that I have for Miles Sanders and this being the last little spurt of volume, unless you're able to move him in season, the move is to get him off your rosters right now, man.
Let me ask you this real quick. Mm-hmm. They're both in similar situations, right? One offense is definitely better and more dynamic than the other, but mobile, you know, really mobile quarterbacks and really limited pass catching opportunities. Would you rather have Miles Sanders or Dobbins?
I take Dobbins for the youth, and because
just moved Dobbins ahead of him, which is why I asked. But it's interesting, and I just think Dobbins, like, because the Eagles, like, Baltimore is not going to be a pass heavy offense because their run game is probably the most unstoppable in the NFL. Like, you just can't stop it. And Dobbins will benefit off that, and that'll help make up for him not catching, you know, 35 to 40 passes.
Yeah, I mean, I just think Baltimore is going to have a more efficient offense than Philly, and as well as I think it's a really good parallel. I'll definitely say that. It's a really, really good parallel. But I think that Dobbins, I believe, in the consistency of his efficiency showing up on a weekly basis versus Miles Sanders. We saw it some weeks. Some weeks it was very, very hit or miss.
It was a lot of long runs or nothing with him.
Yeah, it has been, man. And I think that the per carry efficiency for Dobbins, I think, is we're going to see that on a more consistent basis. So we're talking about, okay, maybe the volume is not there, and we're talking about touchdowns. And if they score touchdowns, the equity is more or less going to probably come from long runs. You got the goal line vultures with the quarterbacks. Give me J.K. Dobbins there, man. But staying on at least players that people have been truthers for and talking about, and the hype has been real in previous seasons, man, I'm out on Christian Kirk. I mean, I think that there's no way that we can't sit here and consider him a loser after the NFL draft for a player that has failed to crest 750 receiving yards in any NFL season right now. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2022. We saw this team address, not only did they sign this zombified corpse of A.J. Green, who, good Lord, he's like, he's older version DeMarcus Robinson. He's just out there running sprints. That's it, period. They signed him, and they drafted Rondale Moore. I think it's very, very telling considering the lack of high-end picks that the Cardinals had, and they used one of them on a wide receiver, and it's being Rondale Moore. I think it just tells you everything you need to know about Christian Kirk, man. Rondale Moore is going to be given the chance to sit here and ascend in this offense and be the option behind DeAndre Hopkins. Can Kirk be productive? Sure. But I just don't, like, for Dynasty, this is terrible. Absolutely terrible. Even for redraft. Like, if Rondale Moore is as good as we possibly think he is, and he can actually explore a lot of these other different facets of his game, like, if he is as good outside as I think he is, he's going to hurt Kirk for day one. Now, is Kirk still going to play a bunch of snaps because they run three wide, four wide a ton? Yes. But as a guy that you were like, in previous years, we were talking about, hell, Adam, he had a run last year. We're talking about a DFS. We were like, this is awesome. It's fantastic, man. He's doing so, so good. I can't necessarily project any of that for Christian Kirk this year, dude. Like, I just think that it's going to hurt him. I definitely think that Rondale Moore could hit the ground running. And Dynasty stock-wise, scary stuff, man.
Larry Fitzgerald still hasn't made a decision on his playing status in 2021. Like, you know damn well, if Larry Fitzgerald says he's coming back, he's not coming back to be a player coach that plays five snaps a game. He's playing, and he's playing in the slot, and he's taking snaps away from whoever. So, Christian Kirk shouldn't be drafted in really any of the, you know, any formats other than like the deepest of leagues. And even then, I'll probably find some of the rookie receivers or, you know, sophomore receivers potentially. That I'd rather take a shot on, like Henry Ruggs, Gabriel Davis, Jalen Reagor, no thank you on Christian Kirk.
No, man, and look, the only way that I would even possibly even considering him is if I was in best ball and I'm stacking Kyler and I miss out on Rondale. Past that, no, I'm out, man. If we're talking about rookie landing spots and these young wide receivers, especially possibly slot options, that absolutely destroyed the value of these veterans, man. Who's the next guy you got to bring up here?
Yeah, Elijah Moore goes in the second round of the Jets. Really hurts Jameson Crowder. There was like a report after the draft that they were going to still have Jameson Crowder as their primary slot receiver in 2021, and then Elijah Moore would be the guy in 2022. I don't believe that. I think it's going to happen this year. I could see him even getting, you know, out from Jameson Crowder this year and just running three wide sets of Denzel Mims, Corey Davis, and Elijah Moore in the slot. Not that Jameson Crowder was the highest upside player in fantasy anyway, but Elijah Moore being there, plus Corey Davis being there, it's kind of the same situation as Christian Kirk. It just crushes his potential.
Oh, it's terrible, man. It's absolutely terrible. And then you also look at his contract, dude. Like, if the Jets were to wake up tomorrow morning and say, you know what? Let's address a few other positions, like with some other veterans that are hanging out there. Okay, who can we sign to like a 1-year deal, give him some quiche, get him in the door and help out our team? They could cut bait with Jameson Crowder tomorrow and save $10.3 million against the cap, Adam. Like, you're literally talking about, okay, well, we've got other receiving options. We signed Corey Davis. We got Denzel Mims. We got Elijah Moore in the building now. We cut Jameson Crowder. Maybe we go add some more offensive line depth. Maybe we add a piece on the defense. You know, I mean, like, there's options there where they could explore something, like, for a veteran on a one-year deal and say, okay, that's more to us and better considering than having Jameson Crowder here eating up the cap. You know, so I don't even rule that out, man. I don't rule out even this late in the game. Could they sit here and still cut Jameson Crowder? Yes. I think that's not off the table at all.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
And for that reason, it's like you can't be in on him if you're doing early best ball drafts or if you're even like doing a little bit of research or you're talking about your dynasty league. You got to be sitting here giving – if you can get a peanut butter sandwich for Jameson Crowder right now, you got to be getting that, man. Like, unless you got peanut allergies, it's time to get the sandwich. Get it and enjoy it. Because, I mean, after that, you are going to be left holding the bag on a slot wide receiver that after this season, in 2022, he's 29 years old. He's already had a long injury history. He's been productive, but a lot of that's all been volume-based, dude. So, no, his value is poof. It's gone. It's dust. So, I mean, I think it's right now is the time to try to move him if you have him in Dynasty and get really anything you can for him, any kind of rookie pick. Trying to move him in a trade in multiple pieces and slide him in there as another little tag-along player for somebody that, like, the one Jets fan in your league, which send him packing, man. All right, everyone, that is our veteran losers for the NFL draft. Adam and I are going to be back later this week to walk through another NFL rookie dynasty mock draft with Pat Crane. He's stopping back by. We chopped up before the NFL draft. We're going to talk about some player movement, where these guys have kind of shifted out since the NFL draft. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.